Conflict, rancor, exuberance, defiance, all that and more surrounded President Trump's State of the Union message last night. And today at 1 p.m. Pacific time, you'll hear live coverage of the Trump impeachment vote in the Senate. How is all of this trickling down to where you live and work? On Insight, we'll sample reactions from Republican and Democratic leaders from Sacramento and San Joaquin counties. Then Kobe Bryant's relationship with Latino fans. I talked with LA Times writer Gustavo Arellano on Monday. You'll hear part of that conversation. An LA Times story from yesterday by two different writers describes the complicated reaction to Bryant's death from victims of sexual assault. So we posted those articles and more on our website. Later in the hour, the famous Johnny Cash concert at Folsom Prison. It's remembered in a traveling exhibit opening today in Rancho Cordova. I'm Beth Ruyak. That's ahead on Insight. From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. President Trump's State of the Union address. Rush Limbaugh received a presidential medal in the midst of it. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi tore the president's speech in half behind him when he finished. There has never been a State of the Union address so dramatic, and perhaps with an audience so clearly divided. But the question for us today is, how is that reverberating to our own daily lives? And how true is the picture that the president laid out? We're going to sample reaction from four guests. In the studio with me is Betsy Mahan. She's chair of the Sacramento County Republican Party. Hi, Betsy.
Hi.
Glad to have you back on Insight.
Thank you.
Terry Shantz is here. He's chair of the Sacramento County Democratic Party. Hi, Terry.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in. On the phone with us is Reverend Dwight Williams. He's chair of the San Joaquin County Republican Party. Hi, Reverend Williams.
Hi, how are you?
Glad to have you back with us. And Mayor Michael Tubbs is with us, too. He is the Democratic mayor of Stockton. Mayor Tubbs, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to get a quick reaction to the events last night. Betsy, let's start with you.
Certainly. Well, we had a watch party last night in Folsom with standing room only crowd, and everyone was so pleased to see our president talking about his accomplishments.
All right, Terry, on the Democratic side.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I really feel like the past 3 years have been just the worst season of Black Mirror that I've ever seen in my life. It really feels like an alternate universe that you have a president up there at times feeling more like running a game show than running a nation. It was divisive. It was brought out the worst in our fears about what our country is about.
Reverend Williams, on the Republican side in San Joaquin County, some reaction.
I believe the president's message was very full of details and facts as it relates to his accomplishments over the last 3 years. He drew a significant contrast over the last few years in comparison with the current set of 3 years of his term, and felt like he gave tremendous statistical data which showed the significant increase as far as with economic activity, as well as lower unemployment, as well as the foreign policy successes as well. But it was a very excellent speech.
All right. And Democratic reaction from Stockton's mayor, Michael Tubbs.
Well, I'm going to push back. I don't think I'm giving a Democratic reaction. I'm representing everyone as mayor of the city. But I would say, I think for most people, we're hoping to hear more about housing, affordability, and homelessness. I know the 1 in 2 Americans who are $500 away from an emergency and being bankrupt from that would love to hear more of an economic policy. So I think unemployment is one thing, but wages aren't paying. Then who is the economy really working for? And I think for a lot of people, we're still trying to figure out what has been the success for the 2017 Trump tax cuts and how that trickled down to Main Street. And I think, again, giving someone like Rush Limbaugh a Presidential Medal of Freedom just really speaks to the president's real agenda and who he really centers when he thinks about the American people.
All right, we're going to pick up exactly on that topic and listen to about a minute of what the president said in terms of the economy. He talked about it as a cornerstone of what he called the Great American Comeback. So let's listen, and then we'll circle around again for reaction.
This is a blue-collar boom. Real median household income is now at the highest level ever recorded. Since my election, U.S. stock markets have soared 70%, adding more than $12 trillion to our nation's wealth, transcending anything anyone believed was possible. This is a record. It is something that every country in the world is looking up to, they admire. Consumer confidence has just reached amazing new highs. All of those millions of people with 401ks and pensions are doing far better than they have ever done before, with increases of 60, 70, 80, 90, and 100% and even more.
Let me hear first from San Joaquin County. And Reverend Williams, I'll start with you. Are people in your neighborhood, in your church, in your circle of folks in the Republican Party experiencing this high real median household income, the consumer confidence that the president talked about, and the strength in their 401ks and pensions? Can you take it to the level in your community?
Yes, I can say that, and I can say that with this sense when the key word is confidence. There is a greater sense of optimism and confidence that exists. People do feel better, and obviously when people feel better, their confidence grows, their attitudes are better as it relates to them achieving their dreams more. They may be dealing with struggles, like when California is dealing with Mayor Tubbs said about housing affordability and other type of related issues, which are really state-driven issues in many ways. The federal government can do its part, but a lot of our issues dealing with affordability issues, as we're dealing with health care-related issues, all these other issues are combined. But the optimism, the key factor, what you spoke about, Beth, dealing with confidence, is definitely up. People are more willing to start their own businesses. They're starting to be willing to go out there and get back off into the labor market. All of those things have been improved because of the beginning climates that's coming from the federal levels in Washington.
Okay, Mayor Tubbs, in the city, your citizens, again, the same question about household income, consumer confidence, and the strength in 401ks and pensions. Are you seeing this blue-collar boom?
Well, I think for anyone throughout the nation, if you were wealthy before Trump became president, you're wealthier now. And I think that's one of the true things the president said in his speech. But for regular, ordinary people, whether they're migrant field workers or Uber drivers or janitors, orderlies, people who make at or below the nation's median, they're not seeing a boom, right? And I think I can't even point to a policy that the president has enacted that would have created such a boom. And I know a lot of the successes of this economy are actually a trend he's riding that started in 2008 under the previous administration. So I just take real issue with the idea that because people who are already doing well, people who have pensions and 401ks, because they're doing better, that's barometer for the health of the entire nation. It's good for them, but for the majority, vast majority of Americans are still struggling with rising health care costs, rising opioid and the medicine costs, and just really rising cost of living. And the president proposed no policies last night, or has done nothing in the last 3.5 years to really combat those issues facing blue-collar workers in Main Street.
All right, Betsy, as chair of the Sacramento County Republican Party, you just heard Reverend Williams talk about confidence and optimism, but how about real results? Are you seeing the boom in Sacramento?
Well, I think what Reverend Dwight said that needs to be repeated is that California may be different than a lot of other states in that there are a tremendous number of businesses and individuals who are leaving the state because of overregulation, because of a very poor business climate. But I want to say that leaders at the local level and the state level should be very pleased that the stock market is rising, because that could save our pension program that's terribly underfunded.
Terry, how do you see it? Terry Shantz.
Well, for workers in not just in California, but across the country, unemployment's down because they're having to work 3 to 4 jobs in order to pay their rent, in order to provide for themselves and their families. Like Mayor Tubbs said, those at the 1% are going to continue to do well. The gap and the declining middle class is having real impacts here in California. I was really touched last night by this President's State of the Union talking about economic growth. If it wasn't for California's growth, he wouldn't be able to tout the economic successes. California's economic success companies aren't leaving California. Companies are running to California because of our market share, because of the quality of life that we're able to provide residents in our state. It's been evident from the $21 billion surplus that the state of California has this year, that the policies that the state of California has done, welcoming immigrants, expanding healthcare, expanding educational opportunities, has been a boom for our economy. Our tech sector alone has been a driving force for the stock market. Without that, we wouldn't see the economic gains and the stock market gains that we're seeing across the country.
You know, you and Betsy are leaders of opposing parties, whether you want to really use the word opposing, the Democrats and the Republicans, but you'd never met before this conversation, correct?
Correct.
What's going to happen after this?
We're going to have lunch.
We are going to have lunch. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. So let's.
I offered to pay, and she said we can go Dutch. I said that's okay.
All right. You can work that out. Yeah. I'm just glad that in that sense we built a bridge. So let's move on with our next comment from last night. We are talking about health care to illegal aliens, as the president called them. Let's listen to more of what he said.
That is what is happening in California and other states. Their systems are totally out of control, costing taxpayers vast and unaffordable amounts of money. If forcing American taxpayers to provide unlimited free health care to illegal aliens sounds fair to you, then stand with the radical left. But if you believe that we should defend American patients and American seniors, then stand with me and pass legislation to prohibit free government health care for illegal aliens.
Terry, I'm going to let you start on that one. Let's get the Democratic perspective from Sacramento County.
There is nothing radical about making sure that sick people are able to see a doctor or a healthcare provider. There is nothing radical about having a level of compassion and in a governance of a state or even in a local government that says that regardless of your immigration status, you just as much as you have a right to be protected from a fire or be protected from crime when if you need to call 911. An individual that gets sick should be able to go to a doctor. California has been able to prove by expanding medical access to undocumented individuals. Again, we continue to have economic growth because of our immigrant communities. We continue to have a healthier state because we're providing access, we're expanding access. The governor this year is proposing to expand healthcare access to seniors, undocumented seniors, which is a wonderful thing to do because these are individuals in our community that are part of our community, that have been part of our community. They get sick like anyone else, and they deserve the same access to healthcare as anyone else.
Mayor Tubbs, you're involved with a number of other mayors and cities across the state. The president said what's happening in California and other states is that the systems are totally out of control, costing taxpayers vast and unaffordable amounts of money. Is that true?
Well, again, but what this president does, he distracts and conflates. So absolutely, I think everyone agrees that healthcare is too expensive. That's why we're having a robust conversation nationally about how do you provide health care for everyone. But the cause isn't from undocumented people. The cause is because folks like the president have allowed the insurance lobby and pharmaceuticals to really control and dominate the discussion about health care in this country. And then I would also say this idea that undocumented immigrants are the enemy and they're the reason why health care costs is just nonsensical. I think there's a deliberate ploy by the president to distract from the fact that he's not interested in protecting people who are preconditions in healthcare, that he's not interested in standing up to the pharmaceutical industry, and he's not interested in standing up to the insurance lobby. So instead of proposing a solution to get everyone coverage and keep costs down, he scapegoats a group that actually also pays taxes in the form of sales tax. It's just nonsensical. And again, another example of how a wasted opportunity to really bring the country together around something we all need, healthcare, was used to divide and conquer, not propose any solutions, but propose finger pointing that would keep people in Appalachia and throughout this nation still sick and still unable to afford the coverage they need.
Betsy, and again, Betsy Mahan is chair of the Sacramento County Republican Party. He did talk about taking on the pharmaceutical company. He did talk about legislation to lower the cost of prescription
Absolutely.
Drugs. What do you think of him using the phrase illegal aliens?
Well, it's not a phrase that I use, but the difference between Democrats and Republicans is that we differentiate between legal and illegal immigrants. And this whole issue of providing health care really is a symptom of a larger issue of encouraging people, millions of people, to come to California. And when they do come here, they see that maybe there isn't employment or there isn't health care. the people who support President Trump in Sacramento County, who have come out and are now active, are working class people who struggle to pay for their health insurance, struggle to pay for their kids to go to college. And when they see people coming into this country illegally or otherwise and being given things for free that they've had to work very hard for, they're frustrated with that. And that's why they're attracted to President Trump.
And Beth, just to respond to that briefly.
Let me get to Reverend Williams real quick, because there's a Republican voice down there. Would you say the same thing, that your Republican Party in the county, Reverend Williams, is comprised of a lot of working class people?
Absolutely. I agree completely with Betsy. That is the issue at hand, really, is dealing with whether or not we in California can become a magnet. We cannot take care of the Western Hemisphere of everybody coming over. First things are first. We are, of course, everybody recognizes that we are a nation of immigrants. No one is doubting that. But the idea, as Betsy alluded to, is dealing with legal versus illegal. And we cannot, I repeat, we cannot take care of everybody in the world, do it right, and still maintain economic viability. In the long run, it will not work.
All right, I will spend a little more time here on each of you responding to some of the things you've said. Go ahead. Terry Shantz is chair of the Sacramento County Democratic Party.
Yeah, I think it's important to push back on some of the things that were said, because no one's getting healthcare for free. And in fact, if you look at the president's policies to restrict Medicaid access, the very people that our Republican friends are saying that they're fighting for are not being able to get access because the president will not allow for continued expansion of Medicaid, which in California is Medi-Cal. The Trump administration just rejected an attempt by the state to expand Medi-Cal access through it's called the MCO tax, which would have provided millions of people in California with health care, many of them Republicans. And that rejection of that will make health care less accessible and less affordable to families. It's just it's a false dichotomy that there is somehow we're providing a benefit to undocumented individuals that we're not providing to others. We provide health care, and California has been a leader. The Democrats have been a leader in expanding health care, expanding the ACA, making health care affordable and accessible to everyone.
Betsy, what about fact-checking this president? And I will add that PolitiFact.com has already posted a number of fact checks and will continue to fact check the speech last night. But what about some of these details where either the fact isn't correct or the nuance, the framing of it, is something that shifts enough to suit the president but may not be fully true?
Well, everyone has their own numbers, and certainly the president has been the victim of a lot of bad information being thrown at his administration as to what he's accomplishing or what he's focusing on. So everyone has their stats, and everyone uses them to their advantage. I want to look at what my life experience is, what my family's life experience is, and those people who are coming into our office to talk to us every day. We had a gentleman come in the other day, a Hispanic veteran. He came in and he said, "I'm leaving the Democrat Party. My whole motorcycle club is leaving the Democrat Party because of the impeachment process and the unfairness that they saw." So I like to look at people's personal experience or life experience, not stats. And that's what I look at to judge the president.
So just on this point, do you believe that you're...
Can I try something on that?
Hang on, one question here, and then I'll get right to you, Mayor Tubbs. Do you believe that your taxes in California are going to pay for unlimited free health care to illegal immigrants?
I think that they certainly have access to it, and they keep expanding it to different people. I totally understand why people need to be able to go to the doctor. I'm not insensitive to that at all. But I think that people are being brought to or lured into California with the idea that they're going to be taken care of, even if they're here for opportunity. And I think most immigrants are. But then they come here and they realize that businesses are leaving here. The people who pay the taxes are leaving for Texas and other states. And our economy is going to implode. I absolutely believe that.
Mayor Tubbs, go ahead.
Well, a couple of points. Number one, whether they're given health care or not, when folks go to emergency room because they're not covered, we're all paying for it anyway. So again, it's misnomer to say that our costs are exuberant because undocumented people get sick and are covered. It actually makes it a lot more affordable for all of us. And then number two, to the point of fact checking, I think we just all have to realize this president lies, and he lies a lot. And I think looking at PolitiFact, most of the things he said in the State of the Union speech were not true. And I think that's very dangerous, particularly for a democracy where we can't believe on the standard set of facts. Like, everyone should not have their own numbers. You can't govern like that. We could have different solutions, but the idea that we're living in different realities is a dangerous one. I think we saw that in the impeachment proceedings, and we're seeing that it continued over the past 3 years.
So we just
Can I chime in for a second? I want to stay on the issue here with health care versus health access. Many people conflate the two to think health insurance and health access are the same. They are not. If you flood the system, you're going to eventually weaken the whole aspect as it relates to access. How many doctors and nurses and medical professionals are we producing per year just in California alone? Can we sustain that with a open borders type of mindset? Again, it deals with quality of care, but also access of proper care. And that, again, it's a balanced approach that needs to be done. I think we sometimes think that health insurance and health access are the same. They are not. If we don't deal with that, again, as I said before, the system is not going to be sustainable long run.
Well, I look forward to a conversation like this that can be for a full hour, but we're going to be down here to the last question I want to ask each of you, and that is whether the divide and the rancor and the separation that's happening in Washington is evident around you in where you live, where you work, the spirit of the discussion of politics. And Reverend Williams, I'm going to go back and start with you. Dwight Williams is chair of the San Joaquin County Republicans. What do you think about the divide?
Well, the divide on a whole is definitely very, very deep and very tragic in many ways. I must comment, you had mentioned earlier, Beth, about Betsy and gentleman in Sacramento County, Democratic Party, had never met. I can't say that about Mayor Tubbs. Mayor Tubbs and I actually do know each other, actually consider each other as even as friends, work together on a personal basis. So on San Joaquin County side, we try not to get involved in the personal issues. We may have differences of opinion as it relates to solutions, but we don't deal with that in any kind of personal animosity against each other, just maybe a different and philosophical approach. And I hope on a local level, as that old saying goes, that all politics is local, that common sense solutions can be found with people from good means and good intentions on both political parties can help address some of the common solutions and also address some of the concerns that people on both sides have to be able to try to find ways that we can work together. I think that will be helpful as we move forward.
All right. Reverend Dwight Williams, thanks so much for joining us. Mayor Michael Tubbs, tell me how you see the divide. Is what's happening there happening here?
Well, as Reverend Williams mentioned, I actually appointed him to one of the most important committees in the city, the committee to see how our taxpayers are being spent for public safety. And in Stockton, I have four Republicans and two Democrats on my council. So we have to govern by consensus. We have to be on the same page. But I do think what makes that possible, though, is clear alignment on values. Some clear alignment on the fact that Stockton, we believe in opportunity for everyone. That in Stockton, that we love, we're proud of our being the most diverse city in this country. And we are welcoming the immigrants. We don't want our cops cooperating with ICE. And we want to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to breathe clean air, drink clean water, and live in a safe neighborhood. And I think because we lead with values and this idea of being a good neighbor, we've been able to kind of, even despite ideological differences, actually govern to the point where we've seen reductions in homicides and in shootings, where we've seen our fiscal rating get up to the second most fiscally healthy city, where we see us being named the All-American City two of the last 3 years. And a lot of it's because we're really clear on values. It's not Democrat, Republican, it's American. It's about liberty and justice for everyone.
All right. Thank you, Michael Tubbs. So glad to have your time, Mr. Mayor. All right, we're going to wrap this up with about 30 seconds here in the studio. So Terry Shans, thanks again for coming in. He is chair of the Sacramento County Democrats. What about the divide and the trickle-down impact?
I think the challenge is that there's no middle ground when Americans have been under attack every day since President Trump was elected in 2016. When LGBT Americans like myself, when women, when minorities have been under attack every day feels like election day. And every day has been a reminder about the importance of our action at the ballot box. It's not a time, there is no middle ground when the alternative is so extreme, which is why we need to go in a new direction, why we need to elect a new president in 2020.
Thanks again for your time. Glad to have you here. And Betsy, we're back around to this and a speech by the president, who is often accused of being the one who divides or sets the tone of division in this country. We're going to put that aside and just tell me about the community around you. Has it rippled across the country?
Well, it certainly has. But I think last night when people saw Speaker Pelosi rip up his speech, they realized that there's probably no chance that a Democrat-controlled Congress is ever going to work effectively with the president. But what I'm doing on the local level is making sure that I'm taking advantage of invitations from the League of Women Voters or Capital Public Radio or places where Republicans have not traditionally been heard. And I think that we need to talk about our views. I think that we need to have lunch with each other because I think that we all want to solve homelessness. We all want California to be affordable. We want jobs. We want people to have health care. I think we have the same end goals. It's just how we get there may be different.
Thank you. And this is not your first time with us on Capital Public Radio, so I appreciate
Correct.
That you do say yes, you do return. Betsy Mahan is chair of the Sacramento County Republican Party. This is the kind of discussion we need to have again and again. So again, my thanks to all of you today. And later today, U.S. senators will vote on the impeachment of President Trump. NPR's special coverage begins at 1 here in the West, and Cap Radio will carry it live. Up next, we are going to hear about Kobe Bryant's impact on Latinos from Gustavo Arellano. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. A story in the LA Times yesterday described a complicated reaction to Kobe Bryant's life and legacy. This reaction coming from some sexual assault victims. Kobe Bryant was arrested and charged with rape in 2003. He eventually admitted to adultery, but he said he was innocent of the rape charge and later apologized to the young woman who filed charges. He has become an advocate for women's issues and rights in the latter part of his life. We've linked that article. It includes more details. It has unleashed an intense amount of social media conversation and discussion. Kobe Bryant died 10 days ago in a helicopter accident that also took the life of his daughter, two more young teenagers, and five more adults. We have learned today that a public memorial service for Orange Coast College basketball coach John Altobelli, his wife and daughter who were on board, will be held February 10th at Angel Stadium of Anaheim. There are no specific details yet on the Bryant funeral. Monday, I talked with Gustavo Arellano of the LA Times about a piece he wrote. It was focused on Latinos and Kobe. Any reference today that you hear in this tape, in fact, actually means Monday. But Gustavo described to me the relationship that he calls kinship. And I asked him to tell me more about that.
Well, what's amazing is you could see it at Kobe Bryant's final press conference as a player. In Spanish, he starts talking in Spanish, and he says how the very first fan base that embraced him when he came to Los Angeles as a teenager, let's not forget that he was a high school phenom, were Latino fans. And he said Latino fans meant the world to him. And so when Kobe passed away, the first people I started hearing it from wasn't even my own newspaper, the LA Times. It was my friends. It was my cousins. They were reacting, and they were crying as if it was a close family member, because in Kobe, that was the Latino superstar of our generation, and especially the generation below mine.
It's ironic, isn't it, that he said those words in that press conference and how they've been able to ring around the world now?
Oh, it's really amazing, and it's a testament to what Kobe represented for Latinos. So in my story, I talked to many fans, and they, in many ways, they considered Kobe to be a Latino, and the least of all, by the way, was the fact that he married a Mexican American woman, and his four daughters were Afro Mexican Americans. In Kobe, they saw the work ethic of their own parents. In Kobe, they saw a committed Catholic who, on the day that he passed away, he was at 7 a.m. Mass at Our Lady Queen of Angels in Newport Beach and took communion. They saw in him the fact that he liked soccer, that they also loved the fact that one of his favorite restaurants in all of Orange County where he lived was El Camino Real, this Mexican restaurant in Fullerton, where his go-to order was a plate of carnitas and with a dessert of flan.
Mm-hmm. That's the restaurant you wrote about. In fact, you say that it was a childhood favorite restaurant for his wife's family, so it went back quite a ways in her tradition.
Oh, absolutely. Imagine, this is a restaurant that the biggest NBA superstar of this generation, one of the world's biggest sports stars, went to regularly for almost 20 years. And I interviewed some of the workers there, and they said, yeah, Kobe would come in and he'd tell the staff, hey, I want to be treated as a customer because that's who I am. I'm going to stand in line, and then I'm going to sit down with my family. And, of course, everyone's looking around asking for his autograph, and he would tell everyone, hey, you know what? I'll get to the photographs, and I'll get to the autographs. Let me just eat in peace with my family. After that, I'm all yours. He'd go back into the kitchen, hang out, and talk to everyone in Spanish. Marissa Castañeda, the daughter of the owners, she said that Kobe tenía confianza, which in Spanish roughly translates as he felt right at home among Mexicans at a Mexican restaurant.
Would you remind us of that story when Vanessa Lane Bryant wore that T-shirt back in 2010? That was another moment that said so much about their family, so much about their culture, and reverberated around the world also.
Oh, yeah. So 2010 playoffs, Lakers are going to be playing first round matchup against the Phoenix Suns. At the time, 2010, of course, Arizona was going through SB 1070, the so-called Show Me Your Papers laws, which was a really draconian initiative targeting undocumented immigrants. So courtside, Vanessa's wearing this totally glittery shirt, you know, typical NBA wife. But then the message says, do I look illegal, as a question. Kobe goes to Vanessa, hugs her. And that's it. Like, no other statement, no other comment. People were just going to tizzy because until then, Kobe had not been explicitly political. Later on in his career, he definitely would with Black Lives Matters. But for them, they're saying, look, we are your quintessential modern Southern California family, if you will. And yes, we are against this measure that really rings to us because, of course, let's not forget in California, you had in 1994 Proposition 187, which was basically the same thing.
So these tributes have been really remarkable, happening. I'm sure it will happen at every game, continuing when the Lakers play, as they do through the rest of the season. It happened at the last two games up here at the Golden One Center, and the Lakers playing the Kings here on Saturday night. I think the outpouring is necessary. It seems that people everywhere, Gustavo, need a place to put their intense feelings about this man, who he became, especially after his NBA career was over. This is part of what's so amazing, right?
Not only that, we're talking about grieving, and Latinos, specifically Mexican Americans, we grieve in very public ways, putting votive candles out in makeshift shrines. And also I believe it was a day after Kobe passed away and everyone else passed away, there was a banda sinaloense, so the Mexican brass bands, they're playing right there in front of LA Live. They're playing traditional songs that you would play at funerals for people from really central and northern Mexico. So Un Puño de Tierra, A Fistful of Dirt, Te Vas Angel Mio, My Angel, You Leave Me, Que Me Entierren Con La Banda, May They Bury Me With The Band. The day after that, mariachis went to mourn Kobe. The day after that, Aztec dancers went in honor of Kobe and all the other victims that had passed away, and also survivors of sexual assault. Of course, let's not forget what was in Kobe's past as well. But Latinos very much are showing, you know, right now the spotlight is on Kobe throughout the world, and Latinos, at least in Southern California, they seem to be driving that narrative of how to grieve, and they're doing it in a very beautiful way, and showing the rest of the world, this is how Mexican Americans grieve. You know, Irish and the police officers, they have the bagpipes. We have the big brass bands.
Well, we posted some links to some pictures of unbelievable murals, too, that are going up.
Yeah.
I expect one to happen here in Sacramento, but the muralists have seen this as a huge opportunity to be part of the commemoration of his memory, Gianna's memory as well.
Oh, street art, of course, in the Mission District in San Francisco, all over. Street art's just wonderful, especially with public murals. But in L.A., where we consider ourselves the public mural capital of the world, of course, they're going up everywhere. Kobe and Gianna, you know, down in Orange County, up in the Inland Empire, they're going all over the ways. And this is the great thing about public murals is they're not just breathtaking masterpieces that can be enjoyed by everyone that are going to be standing up ostensibly for a while. It's a way also not just to feel sad, but to remember the man, the girl, the victims, and what all of this, how this ties Southern California together. And that's the thing, you know, people always like to stereotype Southern California, specifically Los Angeles, as a bunch of little nations squabbling with each other. For the past week, you know, really with the end of the Super Bowl, I would say, once the Super Bowl started, the whole region was in mourning. When they finally hold the public commemoration of everyone's lives, they're probably going to do it at the L.A. Coliseum. Los Angeles is going to stop in a way that hasn't stopped in my lifetime.
You are listening to Gustavo Arellano, L.A. Times feature writer. And in fact, there was a story today noting that funeral plans are still being made. What we're also watching for, Gustavo, is the preliminary report from the NTSB. That's expected to come this week, but that's not going to give us any conclusive answers, though people may be expecting or wanting that.
Yeah, not only that, it's not going to give anyone any closure. We don't know what happened at the end. The actual report, by the government officials or by the government, is going to take months. And even then, there's going to be a lot of what ifs. What if they didn't fly that day? What if Kobe, who had coached his daughter's basketball team the day before in the Thousand Oaks facility where everyone was heading to Sunday morning, what if they had just stayed the night there? You know, maybe at the end, future helicopter flights have, take precautions, kind of like with a Point Concepcion fire, the boat fire that happened this past fall down here in Southern California as well. Maybe out of this tragedy, future tragedies can be averted by what we learn from this.
We'll post a link to some of the articles with mural pictures, as well as your piece, which is headlined, Kobe Bryant Had a Special Kinship with Latino Fans and Culture.
Let's not forget, when Kobe moved to Orange County to be with his wife, Vanessa, where, you know, she's from Orange County, about 2002, he was the enfant terrible, or however you pronounce it, of the NBA. Here's a guy who was young and cocky, really wasn't gelling just yet with Shaq. And then by the end of his career and beyond, he was Mr. Dad. Like, I interviewed people who would see him coaching his daughter's basketball games. And as someone told me, he's like, he wasn't Kobe Bryant. He was just typical dad. If anything, he was better than a typical dad because he wasn't screaming at the referees. He wasn't screaming at his daughters. He was just, the LA Times, we just put out a story today, someone who had seen Kobe in his final game coaching his daughters and everyone else. He was just standing there giving advice, sort of laid back and whatnot. In Orange County especially, everyone had their Kobe sighting. Everyone had their Kobe story. Everyone knew the Starbucks where Kobe liked to hang out in, the church that he belonged to, the movie theater he would hang out, and of course the Mexican restaurant. Yesterday, my sister was at El Camino Real, and she said the line was out the door, and everyone was ordering carnitas.
Oh. Well, the LA Times reports that Vanessa had reached out to the Laker organization and said their family would like to keep the items out there, those T-shirts and letters and stuffed animals and basketballs, and that the flowers would be composted and added to the grounds around. So I think that the closeness, kind of the intimacy, is that the right word, Gustavo, for how everybody is grieving, as you say, and celebrating his presence on Earth, and Gianna, as well as everyone's family in that helicopter, is so powerful at this point in time, right?
Again, I have not seen Southern California so united. Geez, maybe since the passing of Hill Hauser, another legend of, you know, of California, who left us too early. And because everyone, even if you didn't like Kobe, because I'll admit it, I was Team Shaq. I was Team Shaq my entire career, or, you know, the entire their careers with the Lakers. I always thought Kobe was a little bit egotistical. But that said, even the people who did not like Kobe, they respected his game. They respected his drive. And later on, seeing how he championed women's basketball, how he championed girls in athletics, how he was, again, just as, you know, the exemplary citizen, especially in Orange County, always more than willing to hang out with the fans. Vanessa understands this. That's why Vanessa at least wants to see all of these mementos and all this fan art. I mean, even my colleague Daniel Hernandez, he did a story about these unlicensed T-shirt vendors selling, you know, T-shirts of Kobe with the years of his life. Everyone is commemorating Kobe one way or another. There's a hustle. I mean, I think Kobe would have wanted that, but that mama mentality, just always drive, always grind, always hustle.
And fans are being asked to donate to Mamba Foundations if there is something that they want to do. Before I let you go, Gustavo, we're talking on the day of the Iowa caucus. And I've got to ask you about the Latino vote there. A month from now is California. Will you tell me how much you are on the pulse of voters' mentality and what that's telling you?
Yeah, it's a generational divide that I see with Latinos. The young ones, they're Bernie bros. They hail Theo Bernie, Uncle Bernie. They just absolutely love Bernie. Then you have the Generation Xers. They're a little bit more moderate. I'm seeing them slowly go towards Michael Bloomberg, surprisingly enough, and some others with Elizabeth Warren. And then you have the older generation. They do not like what they view as a radicalism of Bernie and even Elizabeth Warren. So they're going with Joe Biden. And it'll be interesting to see, though, if that divide is going to continue once there is a nominee with the Democratic Party. You would hope, at least for the Democrats, that they unite among their, you know, whoever's the final choice. But the heat of within the Latino electorate right now, it's pretty, just like this country, it's pretty divided right now.
So again, that conversation was recorded Monday. We have linked Gustavo's LA Times story and many others related to Kobe Bryant to our webpage, capradio.org/insight. And by the way, those final results of the Iowa caucuses are still pending. When we come back, a traveling exhibit documenting that live Johnny Cash concert at Folsom Prison in 1968. The exhibit is opening today. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio. This is Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. In the mid-1950s, Johnny Cash recorded one of the many songs that would make him a star. It was Folsom Prison Blues, and here's a little bit of that original recording.
I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling around the bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps rolling on down to San Antone. When I was just a baby.
So besides becoming a hit, that song prompted calls for Johnny Cash to come to Folsom Prison just outside of Sacramento and to perform live. So with that in mind, let me introduce Cheryl Gleason, event coordinator and curator at the Mills State Arts and Culture Center, a Johnny Cash retrospective that documented that concert when it finally happened, opens today in Rancho Cordova. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Beth. Thank you for having me.
So tell me about the exhibit.
The exhibit is a photographic journey from 1968 to 1969. At the beginning of 1968, Johnny Cash's career was plummeting. And so they got together with a reverend down in Ventura County, worked with the prison to have him do this concert. And the concert put him basically back on the map. And then, as many listeners know, a couple years later, he was able to have the Johnny Cash show. I don't think, had it not been for this concert, he would have never, ever gotten that show on TV.
He'd been doing these prison visits. A prison concert or visit to San Quentin was very famous. But what happened at Folsom, especially in this area, became a piece of history that has really stood the test of time. So we have 40 photographs. What else in the exhibit?
So the exhibit is of two, Dan Posh and Gene Beeley, who is the journalist from 1968. He will actually be giving a talk tomorrow and some backroom recordings and stories about traveling with Johnny Cash. But also, to complement this, I have inmate art. We have a program here in California called AIC, Arts and Corrections, and it focuses on visual arts, music, and creative writing, poetry. And that has done such an amazing amount for inmates in turning their lives around. So we have amazing art of over 40 pieces from our local inmates here in California.
So Dan Posh was the photographer, correct?
He was.
And then he called Gene and said they had an invitation to attend this concert.
Yes. And Gene actually said, you know, I want to talk to the Reverend to find out if this is real. Because at that time, Johnny Cash had just been convicted of smuggling drugs in his guitar over the Mexican border. And
right.
He's like, I want to find out if this is real.
So, by the way, Gene will be speaking tomorrow night from 6 to 8 p.m.
Yes, at the MAC.
And that's at the MAC. Describe the location of where this exhibit is, because even though we're saying Folsom Prison, it's not there. It's...
No. So the MAC is a art and culture center that is located at the corner of Mather Field and Folsom Boulevard at the light rail station, the Regional Transit Light Rail Station. And it is because of our amazing city government, city council, and through the citizens and the community of Rancho Cordova that we have this amazing site and are able to bring great exhibits such as this together through the Community Enhancement Fund.
The opening reception is this evening from 5:30 to 8. Is
Correct.
That open to the public?
Absolutely.
All right. And then there are events as the exhibit continues to stay open over about a three-week period.
That's correct. We are open on Thursdays, Fridays, and then Saturday during the day. And we have almost an event every day. We play music or movies on Fridays. We have art workshops on Saturdays, and we have lectures on Thursdays. We have the 20th, a great, if you're interested in hearing more about arts and corrections, that lecture is a panel of three people, administrator of AIC, a mother of an inmate, and a teacher of AIC, and also Anna has published a book and did her PhD studies on the outcomes of the arts and corrections.
We'll post a link. I am talking with Cheryl Gleason from the Mills State Arts and Culture Center, where this Johnny Cash retrospective opens tonight. Let's hear the updated version, okay? We're going to hear some of the live recording of Folsom Prison Blues by Johnny Cash.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps a-rolling on down to San Antone. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die.
This history for people is so fascinating. This exhibit does include that moment of the meeting between Johnny Cash and Merle Haggard, doesn't it?
It does. And if you attend tomorrow night from 6 to 8, you will actually hear recordings that aren't public from Gene Bealey, because he has some interviews, interview of him when they were in West Sacramento staying at the El Rancho Motel between concerts. So he really has some great stories that you would not hear because he was there.
This is a national tour. This exhibit is funded by the National Education Association and Mid-America Arts Alliance. So it's on the move, right?
Yes. Sometimes I have to book. So I've booked this particular exhibit a year and a half ago, actually. These exhibits travel for 4 or 5 years, maybe 6, depending on their popularity, and some of them are very hard to get.
By coincidence, it's going to Davis next, I understand.
Yes, it is. And that was definitely a coincidence.
That'll be later in the spring, opening April 7th, continuing into May. Okay, for you, what's the discovery, kind of that surprise in learning about this history and bringing this work to the area?
You know, for me, going through and finding these exhibits that either are pertinent to our local area, whether it's Rancho Cordova or the greater Sacramento area, focusing on local artists, culture, history. I learned so much, and seeing people that come into the gallery and seeing their faces and they thank us for having this, it's an amazing resource. The MAC is always free admission. It's a great opportunity for anybody to come and really experience something pretty amazing. Plus, it's a historically significant building that was built in 1911.
I'm so glad you came in to talk with us about it. Thank you so much, Cheryl.
Thank you for having me, Beth.
A Folsom Redemption opens tonight, again, 5:30 to 8, and the exhibit continues until February 22nd. The MAC is at 10191 Mills Station Road. Again, the website link will be on our website, capradio.org/insight, and you can find all kinds of details there. So that's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. NPR special coverage of today's impeachment vote begins at 1 here in the West, and you'll hear it live on Cap Radio. We are still awaiting final results from the Iowa caucuses, but that information will be posted as well. I think it's a great day to end with a little more Johnny Cash, don't you?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Here we go. I'm Beth Ruyak. Thanks for joining us.
Well, if they freed me from this prison, if that railroad train was mine, I bet I'd move it on a little farther down the line. Far from Folsom Prison, that's where I want to stay. And I'd let that lonesome whistle blow my blues away.